Sarah Gamitter, whose last name seems like a typo.
It does, but it's not.
It's not. You've been a professional stage manager for over 15 years. You've now become a playwright. Is this a step down for you?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 383, Meet the Darwins. For the next 3 months, I'm taking a tiny, one might almost say reduced, break from acting with the RSC to act in the world premiere of In the Garden, a Darwinian love story at the Looking Glass Theater Company here in Chicago. It's very exciting for me on all sorts of levels, not the least of which is that I get to be a part of the creation of a brand new play that hits all of my sweet spots. It's serious and funny, political and intensely personal, intellectual and emotional, and Sarah Gamitter is the playwright who created the whole thing. And after rehearsal last week, Sarah sat down with me to talk about the creation of the play and what kind of a move it actually is to go from stage management to playwriting.
A step to the other side of the table. I loved stage managing when I was a stage manager. It was, I mean, I'm one of those, like many people who get into theater, I started as an actor. Mm-hmm. But it kind of wasn't enough. I wanted to do everything. I wanted to design, I wanted to direct, I wanted to write, I wanted to act, and stage managing was a way to be a part of part of a show from the very, very beginning until the very, very end.
Yeah.
And so I loved that about stage managing, and I particularly love stage managing at Looking Glass because there's all kinds of special challenges. But at a certain point, I reached a point where I felt like, I've got this. Mm-hmm. I've reached the master's level of stage managing at Looking Glass, and I wanted to do other things. And so, you know, so I went off and got a degree in piece education, and I've always thought of myself as a writer and have worked on various projects throughout. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until I stopped stage managing that I had time to focus on being a writer and could actually sit down and write a play rather than tinker with a play for years and years.
The play you've written, In the Garden, a Darwinian love story,
Yes. Is
this daffy romantic comedy about Charles and Emma Darwin. And I say that as a joke, but because it's an historical drama, but there's so much comedy in it. There's so much heart in it.
Yes, there is.
And was that I think it was your goal because it's mm-hmm. in the script, but I think the director and the actors are bringing the comedy into it. Was that your goal to create, what was your goal?
All right, well, first of all, there has to be comedy, A, because I can't help myself.
Okay, good.
I mean, just naturally, things are funny, yeah. And you want them to be funny. And then the story itself has such absurd little details mm-hmm. that you kind of have to make funny or they're tragic.
Right.
Like, you know, Charles Darwin with his kind of epic illness of constantly being vomiting or farting or having an upset stomach. Oh. Like,
thank you for keeping the farts out of the play so far.
Yeah, so far I was like, vomiting. We'll leave it at the vomiting. But, you know, I mean, there's a way to include that makes it so sad that he is, he's sick, he's afflicted his entire life. But we don't want to watch that play, particularly not when we're going where we're going with the play.
Yeah, and he's not a tragic figure at all. Charles Darwin in your hands and in Andy White's performance is the ultimate nerd.
Mm-hmm.
He's just this who's fascinated by the world around us.
Yes.
You know, and he's obsessively taking notes and it's a characterization I think that people can relate to now. Certainly I could.
Oh, yes. And I think there is something that all of us can touch on that, and even that we hope for in ourselves or that we admire, that he notices everything and sees all of these details and is able to write them down and then put pieces together and think, oh, well, if this, then that. And I, you know, everyone has something that they kind of obsess over mm-hmm. that is their you know, their mastermind topic. And for Charles, it's the world.
It's the world. It's just a little thing called everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. But then not only is he kind of the ultimate nerd and relatable, his wife, also first cousin, Emma Wedgwood, of the Wedgwood family, the pottery family, is this devout Christian, almost, I mean, I guess now you would say born again or evangelical a little bit.
Not evangelical, but devout in a way that if she were devout today, we would assume that she was fundamentalist or evangelical.
Right.
At the time, it was more the norm was to be, but she's not just a kind of religious on Sundays person. She's not just a goer to church.
Right.
She deeply believes in God and heaven and miracles, and that God is present in our daily lives. And I don't think you have to be fundamentalist to believe that.
And she's married to Charles Darwin.
She's married to Charles Darwin.
And that's the cool thing, is that all the debates, the tension between science and faith that still go on are embodied in this couple, and it's really sort of amazing that nobody's written this play yet before.
I have to agree with you. I'm glad that no one has written it before so that I don't have to, you know, push aside someone's Richard III to write my version. Their story is really amazing. And the more that I learn about them, I keep joking that I want there to be a Darwin's TV show, because there's so much material, not just like things, you know, various things that we've cut from the play, but in the course of doing the research, reading about them, there's so much material for great, you know, drama and comedy and human interest and discussion. I mean, there are whole things that we just don't have the room to cover.
Well, and one of the great things about the play for me is that you frame all the debates, all the questions that scientists have for people of faith, or that people of faith have for scientists, and in these characterizations of Charles Darwin and Emma, Charles is a man of science who also believes in God.
Mm-hmm.
He just has questions about how God's plan is actually works in practice.
Yeah, exactly. How does God work?
How does it work? And Emma, although she believes devoutly, is not afraid of asking hard questions.
Correct.
Or answering hard questions.
Yes.
I said this in rehearsal. She's one of the most sympathetic characters of faith I think I've seen sort of ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in a way, that's a little sad. I mean, I myself... Yeah. As a person of faith, you know, you get tired of seeing the same, like, of always seeing the extreme version of everything. And that's the wonderful thing about Emma, is that she's very smart and she's very curious, but her curiosity bends her in a different direction, and she has an appreciation. This is what she and Charles have in common. Like, she appreciates the wonder of the world. She just accesses that wonder spiritually.
Right.
And Charles accesses that wonder scientifically.
Right.
So, but they both have the same just kind of amazement at, you know, look at the world. Look how beautiful. Look how amazingly it's arranged. They just attribute that arrangement to different sources.
Yeah, and it's amazing, and the play traces their relationship from when they're children to, I don't know how old they are by the end of it. We've sort of fudged the dates.
Yeah, there's some chronological hocus pocus that goes on. But in 11 years into their marriage from
So 5 or 6 kids into their marriage. And it's really, I said it as a joke, a daffy romantic comedy, but it is. They're a wonderful couple to spend some time with. It also reminds me a little bit, even though you haven't put in a breakfast scene.
I have not. There's no food.
Of The Miracle Worker, in that it's a kind of a classic tale about a famous person, and it's old-fashioned in a good way, and you've got this wonderful Shavian dialogue debating all the various issues that we still debate today, but in this really theatrical production that Jessica Thebus has directed.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it was really important that all of those kind of big ideas be contained within really personal arguments. So they don't, it's not like they, you know, Charles and Emma, you know, sit on the sofa in the evening and say, let's talk about God.
Right.
It comes out of some practical something, like what are we teaching our children, you know, when they want to sing the song about, you know, all creatures great and small. Yeah. What are we teaching our children about that? Yeah. What does it mean if you stop going to church? What are people saying about what you've written? So it all comes out of, you know, something that's personal, not a kind of lofty. In earlier drafts, there was much more of the lofty talk.
Much more pedantry.
Yes, indeed. I do love a good discussion.
Hello, my name's Jasper Ford. I'm the author of the Thursday Next series of books and also the Nursery Crime series of books, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Well, speaking of Charles Darwin, our British and Irish tour of The Bible, The Complete Word of God Abridged, continues across both countries with performances in Wakefield, Buxton, Westacre, Andover, Loughborough, Wellingborough, Tewkesbury, Solihull, Croydon, Shipping Norton, Derry, Londonderry, Drogheda, Cork, Newry, Waterford, Dunleary, Galway, and Monaghan. Then in 2 weeks, we begin our month-long run of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged at Merrimack Repertory Theatre in Lowell, Massachusetts. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Sarah Gemitter, who was telling me what her transformation from stage manager to playwright has been like.
Did you have any say into who would direct? Did you have any say in the casting?
Oh, yes, I had all kinds of say.
Look at you, your mantle of power.
It's so awesome. It really is great.
And what's it been like then for you watching the rehearsals? So you're a stage manager, you're used to taking all the notes.
Oh, yes.
And now you're watching a bunch of dopey actors up there mangling your lovely text. What's that like?
It's very interesting. The very first day that we started off with a lot of table work, and that's very similar. Like, as a stage manager, I would sit at the table, and I've always been fascinated by the whole process, so I would listen. So that was all not so much different. Then as soon as we got on our feet and started blocking, and Jessica started kind of giving direction of, do this on that line, for that first day, I have had this, like, itching in my fingers, and I felt like I should be writing this down. And I had this kind of urge to type her directions into the script.
Right.
And I had to kind of keep stopping myself and looking over at Tess, who's our stage manager, and to reassure myself, someone is writing it down. It's not being lost. It just felt like if I'm not writing it down, it's getting lost. But then the very next day, that was gone, and I was just a playwright.
Well, and do you feel, as the playwright, do you feel, once you've shaken that urge to stage manage it, when you're sitting back there, do you feel like you want to say more to the actors, no, say it like this, or do you feel like more like you want to say to the director, oh, don't tell him that?
I do. The urge to correct, to give the line corrections is very, very strong. And I know, and we've had a very accelerated kind of memorization process for this show. So I know that it's been difficult, and everyone's been doing a wonderful job, and I've written a lot of words.
Yes, usually memorization comes a little bit more organically as you learn blocking.
As you work through. But this was like really putting people up on their feet. And it is, I almost don't want to say this because I know that already the actors feel kind of, I mean, I've never heard so much apologizing with the calling for line ever.
Well, that's the thing about actors that I forget is that, and I'm remembering it now because I'm just an actor in this production, we want to get it right. We forget we're allowed to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's part of the rehearsal process because we want to get it right. Because you're sitting there and the director's sitting there and And it's just, it's been great for me to just be back there and go, right, I remember what my actor brain feels like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've been thinking about that, wondering what that was like for you, because you're also a writer and you frequently act the things that you have written. And so there's a little, do you feel more licensed when you're acting your own words up on stage? Be like, oh, I can say it different if I want.
I absolutely feel more licensed. And you've been very, very patient with me, not only paraphrasing, but just sort of improvising. Sometimes out of necessity. Sometimes out of, oh, in this moment I would say this, even though it's not scripted.
Right.
And some of those you said, oh, that's nice, let's keep that. And some of you have, sometimes you've rightly said, yeah, let's not keep that,
mm-hmm.
which is absolutely right. But I guess if you didn't care for it, you'd tell me.
I would definitely tell you.
So you guys, I think you guys have been very generous with all of the actors fumbling through it. But I also think as a playwright, when there are other actors, you know, sometimes the actors will bring something that as the playwright, I go, oh, geez, why didn't I think of that? That is so much clearer.
Of course, because you all are getting to know these characters, you know, from the inside in a way, and you're going to have part of your process and part of the, you know, there's so much dimension to the character that you create that is kind of behind the scene, behind the scenes of your minds. And so you're going to think of things in a way, you're going to be so much more focused on your character than, you know, in any given scene than I necessarily am. And so, of course, you're going to think of things, or you're going to notice, like, little inconsistencies. And it's one of those, like, it's a great thing for a writer, and why I think playwriting is kind of the best kind of writing there is that there, you know, there are things that you write, and as you're writing them, you're like, that doesn't really make all of the sense. But if they say it really fast, maybe you know.
We'll get away with it.
But then an actor gets up on stage and has to say it, and it becomes very clear that, no, it has to be better than that. You can't leave an actor hanging out to dry like that. And so then, and then it pushes me to, like, no, I'm really going to make everything.
Yeah.
Everything makes sense.
I mean, I will say that for a world premiere of a new script, there's a remarkable clarity already to so much of the text. I mean, I can count on maybe one hand the number of times we had to go, wait, what does this mean? I mean, I think you've really made everything as absolutely crystal clear. How much of the play is coming to life for you in the way you envisioned, and how much of it is, a discovery for you?
Mm-hmm. I would say that it's mostly coming to life in the way that I envisioned. And when it's not, when there are little moments where it's not quite, then I'll usually say to Jessica, oh, what if they try it? What if they just try it this way, just to see how it is? But there are also things that, you know, people are saying or doing that are not things that I ever thought about. And I feel like, oh, no, that's great. You know, we still are having discoveries. Like, I love the discovery about thinking about Parslow being, like, proud of this family that he works for, and, like, taking a certain... And that totally makes sense when you think... I mean, if you go back and research actual Parslow, he did have such a pride in, like, all of the family's things and keeping them nice and the stuff that they did. It just wasn't manifesting in the play, like, in any scripted kind of way.
Well, and why should it? He's the butler. But, you know, but still, yeah.
But right, but then once you find that, then it's like, that gives me more idea. Like, then I can massage this line a little bit and this line a little bit. We had another one of those moments in rehearsal today with, you know, that kind of discovering of, no, Charles is excited about the debate. He's just, you know, he's anxious about it, but, you know, and so then that's like, okay, no, I need to fix that line before, where I was thinking of him totally dreading it.
Right.
Like, no, he's excited, but anxious. It's
different. And it is a different process, because you write it and you know how it should go, and then the actors have to go, all right, I know how it should go too. Somehow I've got to get there.
Yeah.
And I haven't figured out the way to get there, which tools I'll actually need. Are we still happy with the title In the Garden? Are we still thinking of new titles?
No. Well, let me tell you, the process of choosing the title for this play was, I felt like everyone and their sister was giving me, like, had ideas for what the play should be titled. And there was a meeting. It was, I thought when I was writing it, I thought I knew what it was called. It was called Where Charles and Emma Meet. Because, you know, that idea of, like, you know, like, where does, you know, faith and science, like, where do they meet? And there's a whole little speech at the end about, you know, in a little space is best,
right.
Which is all, like, built towards that. That is the title. But then nobody else was excited about it. And it was too much like When Harry Met Sally. And so, you know, there are all these things. And so, and then people as a shorthand were just calling it Charles and Emma. Like, around the office, they were calling it Charles and Emma. Why can't that be the title of the play? And I was like, because that sounds like a Jane Austen some, you know, I feel like that there you have a certain expectation if it's called Charles and Emma, like you think it's about something else. So I, you know, would go through and every other day I would have like some lightning bolt that's like, is this the title of the play? And I would try it out on people and I would get various responses. And there was a production meeting where people were like, we really kind of need to start settling in on what the title is. And just in the course of talking, I just like wrote down this long list of like word associations and all kinds of things, and I just started reading through the list, and one of the things I'd written down was In the Garden, and Jessica was at this meeting and she said, In the Garden, I like that. I was like, oh good, I like that too. But then, you know, then you have marketing people who are like, but we have to have Darwin in there somewhere so that people have like some anchoring thing to know what it's about. And I think Jessica came up with A Darwinian Love Story as the kind of tag. But it was a long process, and there was a point when I felt like, shouldn't I know as the playwright?
Right.
Shouldn't I just know what my play is called?
Right. Titles are hard.
They are.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Preview performances of In the Garden, A Darwinian Love Story begin next week on April 16th, and it runs through the end of June. If you can get to Chicago, come and see us. Check out lookingglasstheater.org for ticket information. Then send us your old-fashioned in a good way play about an historical figure via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and a Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, missing link Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Captain Hogwash. Great name. I think it's a promotion. Used to be Lieutenant Hogwash. No reason. It is just random. Special thanks to Jasper Ford, whose third book in the Last Dragon Slayer trilogy comes out in the States this week. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 383 1149ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Yeah, some sort of Hollywood tagline for their love proved the survival of the fittest.
Yes, exactly. Something like that.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.